This is The Rundown. Hosted by Luke Lipinski. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Live from the Auction Community Studios for the next 2 hours. Luke Lipinski here with you. Spencer Keatsman behind the glass. The D-backs and Rockies are already playing, and they're not losing, but Gambo pointed this out right before he left. It's the first inning, scoreless, runners on first and third for Colorado right now. Robbie Ray has thrown 14 pitches already. He has one out. So, I mean, you can see where this is going. Now, look, it's tough to go into Coors Field, pitch to the Rockies. I understand that, but, man, let's set the over-under right now.
He can't pitch anywhere. I don't care if it's Coors Field.
Well, he pitches well. He just doesn't pitch deep into games. 5 1/3 innings. Do you take the over or the under for tonight?
They were literally just talking about this before they left the studio on the air. I think Burnsy said 5 1/3, and I think Gambo said 5. So it's already trending towards the under on that.
It is trending towards the under.
So I'm going to say under. Yeah, I mean we're getting a better, I guess, head start on if that were an actual wager. But
I guess, man, 5 1/3 is nothing. But I guess I'll take the under because these teams are clearly waiting him out now, too, right? I mean, this is not an accident. We ran through the numbers last week. What was it? Not last season, but the season before, so 2017, he had quite a few games where he went 7 innings or more, and he had a complete game that year. Like, his average was up around close to 6 innings per start that year. So, I mean, if your average is 6 innings, obviously you're going over 6 innings sometimes. He just doesn't do it at all anymore last year and certainly not this year. And now we are 16 pitches into the first inning. He's got a 2-0 count on Mark Reynolds, runners on first and third. Still scoreless, but if this first inning and really his last year and a half's worth of starts are any indication, Robbie Ray's not going to go very deep into this game either, which means you got to lean on the bullpen, which means I don't know if that means we're going to see Archie Bradley. I guess we can just start with the D-backs. What you do with that bullpen? What would you do with Bradley? Two more runs last night. It's pretty clear at this point he's not going to pitch his way out of it.
No.
Not at the major league level.
I mean, he's a big league pitcher. He is. He's just not what we thought he was going to be in one of those situational roles where you need an eighth inning shutdown guy or a closer for that matter. He's still young. He's got a chance to sort of maybe develop another pitch, and I don't know what that pitch would be because, you know, he's tried the curveball. That's not really working.
I don't think it's going to be that. Maybe a splitter.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what kind of pitch you try to develop. You know, by the time you're 26 years old and you're in the major leagues, I'd imagine it's pretty hard to learn a new pitch.
You figure if he's going to do that, and this is his updated numbers after last night, 4.63 ERA, not great. 1.89 whip is horrendous. It is, and I know, like, if you don't play fantasy baseball, maybe you don't understand totally what whip is. Maybe you're just not, it's not like some advanced analytic. It's just walks and hits per innings pitch. So, again, he's basically putting two guys on base every inning, which is, it's bad for anybody. But, man, if you're a relief pitcher, you're supposed to come in and be able to get out of jams, not cause jams.
Mm-hmm. ERA is not huge for me with relief pitchers.
No, it's just more, that's to me, that's why the whip is more important because
that and walks.
Yeah, it's putting pressure. He's creating pressure situations every time he comes in Colorado. Just take the 1-0.
Another sabermetric I like is percentage of pitches put in play.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know what that is. I could baseball reference that, but I'd imagine that number is pretty high for Archie Bradley.
Yeah, it's not going to be good, whatever it is. I don't know at this point. And it's not like I think that Torrey Lovello is doing what he has stressed that he has learned from past mistakes. I don't think he's being overly loyal to Archie Bradley. I think there was some of that probably up to a certain point, maybe last year. And I know he's still been put into pressure situations and key moments of games, even after Lovello said they were going to try not to do that. In fact, it was almost the very next day against Tampa, and that was his best outing of the year. He's a middle reliever on your team, on a team where your number two starter doesn't give you more than 4 innings most nights. Your number three starter is better than your number two starter, but he's hurt now. Your original number three starter is out of the rotation. Archie Bradley's going to be forced into pressure situations as long as he's in your bullpen because the bullpen is pitching the bulk of these games now. So this is really on the verge of unraveling for the Diamondbacks if they don't figure this out. Record-wise, still fine. What are they? One game above 500 now, 28-27. You know, 55 games into a year that was supposed to be a rebuilding year, you'll take being a game above 500, mm-hmm. but it's just it's the peripherals.
How different is this, though, than in years past? Because from the start of the season, the Diamondbacks were pretty much out of the division race. Already. They're not going to win this division. There's no way. The Dodgers are too good. They might be the best team in the National League. So now it's like, how do you go about the rest of the season? You remember last year, they had the division lead for 100 games.
Yeah.
So this is kind of new territory for the Diamondbacks in recent years, where they're out of the division from the start. It's over.
It's going to be really big. What is it? It's the end of May right now. So the next 2 months are going to be, they're going to be huge. Right now, they're two games out of a wild card spot. So, again, it's early. We're a third of the way through the season. But the next 2 months are going to dictate if they are dumping players like Adam Jones at the trade deadline. Or I don't know that we're going to be in a position where the Diamondbacks are going to go out and add rental players. But I just think the next 2 months are going to dictate if they sort of wave the white flag at the trade deadline. And the Torrey Lovello will still be managing to win, and the players that are left on this team are still going to be trying to win. But in terms of making personnel decisions, you've got some guys on this team you could trade away for more prospects. And if you're out of it by the time the trade deadline hits, you know, why wouldn't you? Robbie Ray just got through the first. I missed the exact pitch count. It was 1-0.
It was in the upper 20s. I looked up a second ago, and it was at 24, and he just struck a guy out. So it's got to be close to 30.
All right. Well, that's...
Well, he gave up a run there. He got out of that jam.
He got out of it, but you may as well get the bullpen
pitches.
Ready now at
yep.
this point.
Warm
yeah.
him up.
All right, more voluntary Cardinals activities today out at the training facility in Tempe, Arizona. And see more and more players filtering in and getting used to Cliff Kingsbury's coaching style, and some of these guys just sort of trying to figure out where they're going to fit in this offense. And look, nobody's figured it out on May 29th, certainly. I mean, Kingsbury himself has said on a number of occasions it's going to take some work and some time, obviously. I mean, everybody knows that going in, but this just feels like it's more beneficial potentially to this group this year than it has been in years past, because you're trying something so radical and so new, and you see the potential with a guy like Kyler Murray talking today. And the way the guy talks doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I was out there today, and I can't imagine a guy that has basically won, not just that he's won at every level, he's won almost every game at every level. We're trying to figure out what realistic expectations are for this team this season. And I know the over-under in Vegas is 5, and I know that, you know, they do that. They pick that number without letting emotion factor into it, because they don't really care what the Cardinals or any of these teams do. They just care what's going to make them the most money. So maybe 5 is a fair number. The Washington Post, of all places, had a story out specifically on the Arizona Cardinals, where they ran this algorithm, what was it, 10,000 times, I want to say, and they gave the Cardinals literally a 0% chance of winning the NFC West.
I've seen these, and I think it might have been Bickley and Murata a few weeks ago. They were joking about how that same simulation had only one scenario out of 10,000 where the Dolphins won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, and even that seems high.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was funny.
I believe the Cardinals are the only ones that were given a 0% chance of winning their division. They're not going to win the NFC West. I get that. But
0% is kind of a joke, though.
I mean, they ran this simulation all these times, and it never happened. Even the Miami Dolphins, one of the times, at least, where they were given a 0.3% chance to win the AFC East. The Patriots are in the AFC East, and the Dolphins are actively trying to lose.
Yes. And they gave them a percent chance to win the division?
0.3, which is nothing, but it's still more than zero. It's still more than the Cardinals.
All right, so what was the Rams' percentage, does it say? It's got to be like 60 to 70.
69 for the Rams, 24 okay. for the Seahawks, 7 for the 49ers. It's kind of low for the 49ers.
I'd imagine that 69% for the Rams is probably the highest percentage outside of the Patriots in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
I would guess so. I mean, it's... The Patriots, what do they have, the second easiest
maybe the
again?
Chiefs, but that division's getting better. There's teams that are probably going to be catching up to them, I think. At least the Raiders. Everyone seems to think the Raiders are catching up to them, and
yeah.
the Chargers are already there. So
we talked about this last night, but you weren't here. Of the teams that are eligible for Hard Knocks, so it's the Giants, the 49ers, the Redskins, the Lions, and the Raiders, you want to see the Raiders, right? Unless you're a fan of one of those other teams.
I do. I found out the Amazon All or Nothing series was going to be the Panthers, and I'm like, ooh, that's kind of boring.
Yeah, why would they?
I don't know. That's what they chose, though. They're chronicalizing the 7-9 Panthers from last year, whatever their record was.
Well, I find this interesting that the projections for the Cardinals are so low, despite the fact that everybody seems to love their draft and everybody seems on board with this Kyler. Everybody nationally, I'm saying nationally here, everybody seems to like the Kyler Murray pick and the at least having the guts to go with Kingsbury and try something new, but then everybody predicts them to be horrible. So this goes back to my point from 2 months ago that I really think people nationally just want to see a team that they don't have any ties to try something crazy, because it'll entertain them, and if it doesn't work, they'll just move on.
It's what the Browns did, and it worked.
Team. Yeah,
well, it hasn't worked yet, but it's going to. It's on its way to working, and people were definitely entertained by the Browns once they fired their coach and Baker Mayfield, you know, actually started football games.
Yeah. Why? This is Kingsbury's comments today about his expectations for this team.
Yeah, I'm real short-term on things. It's just trying to get better every day, and we talked to the team about that. And daily improvement, it's a group that's worked hard. They bought into what the coaches are doing, and we got a bunch of great leaders. When you look at, you know, some of the all-time greats that happen to be on this team and the way they work and the way they carry themselves, it goes a long way for the coaching staff.
Now, predictably, he said he doesn't really pay much attention to projections like this.
I really don't. I have some friends that, I got to say, don't send the negativity. I don't need that in my life. But I don't read it, don't get on Twitter, don't do any of that stuff. So I'm sure they're amazing articles by all of you, but I haven't seen too many of them. Yeah, I'm sure. But no, I don't get into that stuff, never have, and, you know, I understand why it's there, and I appreciate it, but I'm not too concerned with it.
I'm really interested in seeing how Kingsbury handles this, just how the Cardinals, how Murray handles it, how Kingsbury handles it if they start this year poorly, because, I mean, they should, in theory. They should start. I mean, what's a good start to the season? Those six games that Patrick Peterson is now missing, I would be ecstatic with 3-3.
Oh, that would be a win.
I'd even take 2-4. It'd be 3 wins. I'd even take 2-4.
Well, yeah, I mean, like a win as yeah, in you definitely won your first 6 weeks if you win half your games coming off of last year with a new system and all that.
Even 2-4, I think I'd be okay with.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the schedule because I cannot remember these things. But I do know they open with the Detroit Lions, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, win that one. Let's start there. Let's start winning the first one. Who was
like
the reporter in there who said, especially me? Were you there today?
I was there. It wasn't me.
You're not going to out the person?
I think I know, but I don't know 100% for sure, so I'm not going to say it and be wrong.
I was like, really? He really said that?
Yeah,
well, nice.
And then Kingsbury left, and everybody had a good time. Look at that. So much different than every single practice last year.
D-backs just tied the game, by the way.
Look at that.
Already off and running, already off and scoring in Colorado.
There we go, yeah.
Blake Swihart, I like that guy. Cool tattoos, too.
Do you like him because of his tattoos?
Because
of his batting average.
He doesn't wear batting gloves, and that magnifies the forearm tats, which is cool.
It's definitely a throwback. Yeah, it is weird to see somebody not wear batting gloves. All right, we come back. We're going to hear more from Cliff Kingsbury talking about Kyler Murray and vice versa. Also, the NBA Finals do start tomorrow. We already know Kevin Durant will be out for game one. What does it mean? Maybe some predictions as well. It's the Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Rundown, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Luke Lipinski back here with you. Spencer Keatsman behind the glass. D-backs now leading the Rockies 2-1 in the top of the second inning. Runners on first and third, nobody out. So trying to get something out of Colorado here after sweeping the Giants. The Giants over the weekend. I almost called them the 49ers. I'm in football mode. Switch to basketball, though. Kevin Durant out for game one of the NBA Finals. I would assume. I know there's this conspiracy theory out there that Durant's done for the year and they've known all along, and it's an Achilles issue, or it's a worse calf issue than they're letting on or whatever. And so they're just hiding it and playing this, we'll just go day to day, basically. Kevin Durant's had calf strains before and has come back from them relatively quickly. Typically it is, you know, it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, depending how intense it is. Also, the Warriors haven't lost a game since he got hurt. They're 6-0, basically. Why would you rush him back until you need him? If you go out there and you win tomorrow in Toronto, I'm probably resting him for game two. as well.
Well, you know, some people are under the belief that the Warriors are better without, in my opinion, the best player in the NBA on the court, which is kind of a joke, in my opinion.
Yeah. They are...
They're good,
either
they're
way. They're still the best team.
Yes.
And it seems like Draymond Green has more internal motivation and drive. And we had Kellen Olsen in here last night sort of breaking down the X's and O's of how they are able to space the floor out better without Durant. But if he's not the best player in the NBA, he's the second best player in the NBA. So you're not better without him. You have to draw that distinction. There's the school of thought that the Warriors are better off without Kevin Durant, or that the Warriors don't need Kevin Durant to win a title. I am firmly in group two there. They don't need him. He could announce his retirement right now. The Warriors are still winning the series in five or six games. But they're not better without him. I mean, you can't take one of the two or three, I guess, let's say two or three best players in the NBA off the floor and say that suddenly makes your team better. This was Steve Kerr. Is this a player that I just forget is even on the Warriors because they don't need him, and I'm not sure why they even went out to get him. But Steve Kerr talking about DeMarcus Cousins.
I think you'll see him. I think the tricky part for DeMarcus is that, you know, it's been 6 weeks, I think, since he's played, and it's already difficult for big guys to catch up to the speed of the game. Yeah.
Conditioning.
It's tough enough. Yeah, conditioning, rhythm, the speed. I think the biggest thing is, you know, we've got to find spots for him.
Yeah.
We've got to see if he can adapt quickly. I told the media yesterday, if this were the regular season, I'd start him, throw him out there for 25 minutes, and whatever happened would happen. But it's game one of the finals,
right.
So we've got to be careful. We know he can help us, but we also don't want to disrupt what we've done the last five, six games.
Steve Kerr's one of, if not the best coach in the NBA. I'm not messing with this until I have to. If they go out there and they lose to Toronto in game one, then, yeah, there's some urgency. You don't want to play around. Toronto's got maybe the best player in this series on their teams. They don't want to screw around. But I'm not messing with what I have for as long as I'm winning. If Golden State goes out there and wins game one, it's the same lineup for game two if I'm running things. This is Steph Curry asked about playing game one without Kevin Durant.
We just keep doing what we've been doing and doing it by committee. We've had amazing contributions from everybody on the bench that's come in and produced for us on both ends of the floor. So, you know, we know what we're capable of, and when he does come back, we'll be able to transition and hopefully elevate our game even more.
How about this quote from Doc Rivers? And I heard Burns and Gamble talking about this when I was driving in. You know, let's say Kevin Durant, for as long as he's not playing, Toronto actually probably has the best player in this series with Kawhi. Now, Golden State has number two, number three, number four, and they are a better team. They have a better coach. That's nothing against Nick Nurse, but I mean, they've been to the last four finals. They've won three. They easily could have won all four, and they're going to win this year. But specifically Kawhi Leonard, he's already won a finals MVP. He's already won the finals with San Antonio before. He's got a ring. So it's not like this is his coming out party in these playoffs, but it does feel like he's raised his profile. How about this quote from Doc Rivers? Quote, well, he's saying Leonard, so I guess that's not part of the quote. He's the most like Jordan that we've seen. There's a lot of great players. LeBron is phenomenal. KD's phenomenal. Not that Leonard is Jordan or anything like that, but he's the most like him. Big hands, post game, can finish, great leaper, great defender, in between game. If you beat him to the spot, he bumps you off, and then you add his 3-point shooting, unquote. Doc Rivers played against Jordan.
I'm not going to dispute that, though.
No, because he went into some specifics, right?
Yeah, and that's
not saying he is Jordan.
It's his era, and, you know, a guy like Doc Rivers, his opinion should be heard and listened to.
Yeah.
Because he's got the resume to back it up. So I'm not going to dispute that. He's obviously not Michael Jordan, but that's more believable than the Kobe comparisons with Kawhi for the clutchness that everybody's coming up
with. Yeah, that was weird. Although that was funny that, like, 2 days later he hit that weird shot against the 76ers that bounced on the rim four times.
Yeah, like the Raptors have gotten there. They've gone through some stuff in the playoffs. They didn't just waltz their way there. It took game seven. It took a buzzer beater to go to game seven against the 76ers, and then they were down 2-0 to the Bucks, and it was not looking good.
They've been the most fun team in these playoffs, I would say.
Right. Their games have been the most entertaining. I would probably agree with that.
Golden State just cruises. And you know, it is a more interesting storyline, Golden State without Durant. But at the end of the day, they are exactly where everybody knew they were going to be. But with Toronto, it's like you went all in on Kawhi and you had, You had to hit one of the strangest buzzer beaters ever just to take Philadelphia out in Game 7, the first ever buzzer beater to end a Game 7. And then, yeah, down 2-0 to a Bucks team that they're not the best team, but they had the best record this year. So that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. So I hope Toronto makes this a series. I have nothing against Golden State, but I don't want to be talking about a sweep or five-gamer. All right, more from Cliff Kingsbury here talking about Kyler Murray. It's going to be the storyline for the Cardinals for the entire season. That's just the way it's going to be, specifically how those two work together with everything else that's going on around this team. And we had that story from ESPN yesterday talking about each main like plot line to pay attention to for each NFL team this year. And all it was for the Cardinals was just all Kyler Murray all the time. I would amend that and mix Cliff Kingsbury in there and just how those two fit together. But this was Kyler Murray today talking. We haven't really heard a whole lot from him yet, talking about which quarterbacks he looks up to.
Obviously, growing up, Michael Vick was, you know, the guy, you know, and then studying the game more, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, Russell. Drew Brees, there's a lot of, you know, Coach Riley had me study, like, pretty much everyone. So there's a lot.
He was also asked about the comparisons to Patrick Mahomes that are certainly going around.
He obviously won the MVP. Respect his game a lot, obviously. So, I think just for me, just working to be myself and just be the best me I can be. I take it as a compliment.
Kyler Murray went on to talk about Andy Isabella was a topic of discussion out there today because he's already built that reputation and he had it coming into the NFL draft. I think it's a major reason the Cardinals wanted him with that 62nd pick, their second choice in the second round. He's got that reputation of just being a hard worker and just, you know, it's he's going to do everything he can to stick around in this league for as long as he possibly can. And there was a great quote from Kingsbury that there's so many Cardinals quotes in here that, here it is. So Isabella showed up. I mean, he's already at the voluntary workouts, but this wasn't even a workout. This was Saturday over Memorial Day weekend. He's just out there running routes. This was Cliff Kingsbury when he was asked about that.
Yeah, I figured it'd be at the W or something with all that money from the new contract. But no, that's who he is. That's all he thinks about. All he wants to do is be the best football player he can be. And that was a big part of the reason, I think, as an organization, we fell in love with him. Knew some real inside information on him, how he worked there, and that's what we've seen since he's been here.
Now, back to Murray, because everything obviously starts with him. He was asked what it's like throwing to Larry Fitzgerald. Now, you know, this is the sort of unique thing that nobody has really dove into that much with this Cardinals team. We always talk about how Larry Fitzgerald's got to be a leader. And, you know, prior to the suspension, how Patrick Peterson needs to be the leader of your defense. Losing Peterson is brutal for 6 weeks, especially because, you know, some of their most winnable games, at least on paper, are in those first 6 weeks. But they've got other vets on defense. On offense, Brett Hundley is the vet of the quarterback group. So if you're Kyler Murray and you're looking to find a role model on this team, it's not that Brett Hundley is not a good role model. I mean, he's very well spoken. He's been around this league. He learned under Aaron Rodgers. So there's something to that. But it's not like he's got a guy that's been in this league as a starter for 12 years at his position he can talk to. And all the receivers are rookies except Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald. So you want to talk about the importance of leadership from Larry Fitzgerald. It might be elevated more this year than it ever has been. Real quick here before we hit the break, Murray asked about what it's like throwing to Larry Fitzgerald.
It's good. It's good. You know, I grew up watching Larry, so it's pretty crazy. But now that he's on my team, you know, he's like I said, he's seen a lot of football just like David has, and you know, he'll definitely. He's already been in my ear a lot, so I think that connection will, you know, hopefully grow and grow.
All right, there you go. So when we come back, we will we'll get into the ASU situation. Marvin Lewis officially introduced today. We're going to try and catch up with Jordan Simone, the former Sun Devil, and get his thoughts on the whole scenario unfolding over in Tempe. Next, it's the Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Keeping it live and local with Luke Lipinski on the Rundown, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Welcome back to the show. Luke Lipinski here with you. Spencer Keatsman behind the glass. We touched on this a little bit last night, but Marvin Lewis was formally introduced today as a special advisor for the ASU football program. So, you know, what that role officially entails, we will see over time. But what it says to me is that the Sun Devils have yet another person involved with the program who has major ties to the NFL. What is it, 16 years he was the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals? I mean, he spent time with the Baltimore Ravens doing stuff as well. But as the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, you add that to your coaching staff. And joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line to discuss this, former Sun Devil. You can hear him on the Sun Devil broadcast. He also has the Untold podcast that he has started up. It's pretty good. I was listening to the Herm Edwards one today. Jordan Simone joining us right now. Jordan, thanks for the time, man. What do you think of this addition of Marvin Lewis to this coaching staff?
Luke, man, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me on, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm pumped that they got Marvin Lewis. I think it's huge for the program. I think to develop the kids and to have another NFL guy with not just NFL experience but head coaching experience like Herm Edwards is huge for this program.
So, you know, he's going to be a special advisor. It's not like he's going to be specifically coaching or anything, but those NFL ties, when you already have Herm and you've got Antonio Pierce and Kevin Mawai, all these guys that have connections to the NFL, if you're a young player that is being recruited, what does that say to you?
I think it just means that you're going to get every opportunity to learn what it means to be an NFL player. And ultimately, in this day and age, that's what every kid wants who's playing college football, is to go to the NFL. And so it's just only another tool in Herm Edwards' belt to help recruit and help develop these young kids and give them a chance to live out their dream, which is ultimately going to the NFL.
Talking to Jordan Simone. Jordan, last year, I guess it was about a year and a half ago now, when Herm was first hired, there was a lot of skepticism around the pro model that ASU was preaching, but it went really well in season one, and we've already seen the impact on the recruiting trail. What's your perception of ASU's reputation around college football now?
Man, I think it's drastically changed since a year and a half ago when he was hired, when people were, you know, really, really skeptical and questioning whether or not he should be hired, and you know, if Ray Anderson was making a mistake, and oh, should Ray be on the hot seat? I think it's completely changed, and people are realizing, wow, Ray is a really smart and intelligent guy, knows what he's doing, and anybody that's been around Herm for more than 30 seconds knows that he is a true, genuine leader, and is really going to lead Arizona State's program back to the glory days of Rose Bowls and competing for championships. And I think that's ultimately what Ray Anderson wanted in this hire. And you got to look at guys going to the NFL. You know, Nikhil goes first. You have a handful of other guys that get chances at teams. Ronell Wren goes fourth round, and then Jalen Harvey goes to the Seahawks as an undrafted free agent. Manny Wilkins is playing for Green Bay. And that's what you want, man. You want guys to develop and get a chance to play in the NFL, because that speaks more than anything else could, you know, as far as just getting guys developed and ready for the next level.
Yeah, and it helps so much to have those connections. Now that we've had a year of Herm as the head coach, and we've seen him go through recruiting and the press conferences and coaching and game and everything, I mean, there's a lot of things that stand out about him. Certainly, he's just a very charismatic talker and everything, but he seems to have such a calm demeanor, and he didn't seem fazed by much of anything that was thrown at him last year. Well, what stood out to you from year one with Herm?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You just said it. I mean, win or lose, he was literally the same person. You know, if we lost by a late game winning touchdown, it was same Herm as if we won against Michigan State. And so I think that's cool, and I think it reflects on the players, and they all just follow him, you know, and know that they just have to do their job, and there's going to be, you know, nobody cussing anybody out. It's just do your job and you're going to be set up for success at the next level. I mean, these guys are putting them in the right positions. And to have Marvin Lewis come on the staff now as another defensive guru and somebody that knows what they're talking about, it's going to be big time for the future of this program.
Talking to Jordan Simone. Jordan, you mentioned N'Keal Harry, who I know a lot of Cardinals fans wanted him to drop one more pick so they could have the chance to take him at the top of the second round. But how big is it for N'Keal, and you know, to a certain extent, the program as well, that he went in the first round, and also that he's going to the Patriots to catch passes from Tom Brady?
Yeah, man, that's something that you dream about, going to catch passes from Tom Brady and with the Patriots and Bill Belichick. That's something that very few can say that they've done. And to be taken as a first-rounder receiver by them, I don't remember the last time they took a first-round receiver.
Yeah.
Maybe the Josh Gordon was the last guy that was had some type of caliber as far as draft picks. But, yeah, man, that's super special. I could not be more happy for Nikhil. He's such a good kid, and he deserves everything that he's getting right now. You know, he's gonna have a lot to learn. My buddy DJ Foster played for the Patriots, and he told me, man, he's got a lot to learn, and that Patriots offense is no joke. But I think Nikhil has the tools to do it.
Yeah, he since day one at ASU, he's looked like an NFL player. Now, I know it's early for ASU, but when you look ahead, even if you don't have specific names you want to throw out there, how do you replace a receiver that was so dominant like he was? I mean, I imagine it's got to be a group effort, but that changes the whole dynamic offensively, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You don't replace a kid like Nikhil. I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer at Arizona State when it's all said and done. He'll be Ring of Honor as he deserves. But, you know, they got a lot of strong kids coming back. They got a good offensive line coming back led by Cole Cabral, who probably could have left for the NFL this year. Obviously, Eno Benjamin is an insane talent. He'll have a very good chance to go pro next year if he can stay healthy. And then you got Kyle Williams, Brandon Ayuk, and Frank Darby coming back at receiver with experience and another year under their belt with the offense. That experience that they got on the field this year will only help them when it comes to training this year. And they have a real chance, all three of those kids, to stand out this year. And Brandon Ayuk is going to have a chance to set himself apart. And, you know, they're going to rely heavily on the run game. And hopefully, you know, Jaden Daniels, who I'm picking to be the starting quarterback, will be able to throw these guys the rock when they need it.
It's like you read my mind, because that was obviously going to be my next question. I mean, the ASU still got basically four quarterbacks they have to decide between. But Jaden Daniels, again, early, but it does seem like he's sort of the leader here in late May, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, he's going to start, man. He's the most ready. You know, he's got the most talent. He puts in the extra effort. He's there late. He's doing all the right things. And I think, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's going to be a hell of a true freshman quarterback for Arizona State, one that the Pac-12 probably hasn't seen in a while. So he's a stud. I know that my boy Mike Bercovici is there now coaching him up and getting him right. So I'm really looking forward to watching him this year.
Jordan, last one. Before I let you go, I need to know what the Untold podcast is all about. Like, I listened to the Herm one today, and it was really good. But what was the inspiration to start this?
Man, I just wanted to do something because I've been in so many locker rooms and I've heard such incredible stories of guys that they come from nothing and become these football superstars. And so starting Untold, I basically just wanted to give them a platform to be able to tell their story from start to finish. And it's been really special for me to sit down with guys like DJ Foster and Jalen Strong and, you know, these guys that have such cool stories and have been through so much adversity and are still there fighting and just inspiring people. And so that's basically what it is. It's just me and a buddy or a former teammate having a conversation about the adversity that he's overcame. So I appreciate everyone that's already listened to it. And if you go check it out, hit me up on Twitter at JordanSimone38 and let me know what you think.
Yeah, definitely do that. Like I said, I listened to the Herm one today. Very good. Jordan Simone, always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for the insight. We'll talk to you closer to the season, all right?
I appreciate you, Luke. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. It's Jordan Simone joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. When we come back, we'll get you an update from the D-backs who are in Colorado right now, top of the third. And we will delve into the wide receiver position of the Arizona Cardinals beyond just Larry Fitzgerald. That's next. It's the Rundown. Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's the Rundown, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Spencer Keith from behind the glass. Thanks to Jordan Simone, who just joined us last segment. I'd like to get, you know, somebody that was just playing college football pretty recently at ASU, just that perspective on what it means to have all that NFL influence around the program. And, you know, it doesn't instantly make you good. And it's not like Marvin Lewis is recruiting directly or the head coach or anything, but it's just it's another guy with NFL ties. We've already seen it. Like having Antonio Pierce has helped already a ton, and it's not like you see him on the sidelines much, but he's just his presence is helping out on defense.
Isn't it crazy how big of celebrities guys like Marvin Lewis and Herm Edwards became without really winning anything in the NFL as head coaches?
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. And the kids will eat this up. They're going to love it if Marvin Lewis is sitting in their living room and recruiting them, you know?
The thing with Herm, too, and you know, Herm is he's just such an outgoing personality, but the thing with Herm is he hadn't coached in the NFL in a while. Marvin Lewis was just the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals last year.
Yeah, and he was, you know, I wouldn't say forced out of there because he had a long career, but his job's been in question in Cincinnati for a long time.
It has, but I mean, if you go back to, what is it, we're going 2012 to 2015, they won double-digit games every year. I mean, he's a guy that got an NFL team to the playoffs fairly consistently there for a stretch. He didn't win in the playoffs, but 5 straight years and 6 out of 7 years, he took an NFL team to the playoffs. When, you know, if you're looking for an NFL coaching job, maybe that's not enough, but when you're just talking about a guy that's going to be a special advisor to your college football program, That's he's very overqualified.
It's
for
a household
job.
Name. That's why they hired him. Yeah. It's going to help the program, bring popularity to the program, helps with recruiting. It helps to have NFL guys. I firmly believe that.
Just helps to have connections in general. To the D-backs game, they're in Colorado right now, bottom of the third, no outs. Robbie Ray is 40 pitches deep into this game, so he actually got through the second relatively quick. He was up around close to 30 after the first inning. Bottom of the third. I mean, he's not going to go deep into this game, obviously, if he's already 41 pitches in now. It's a 1-2 count, nobody out, nobody on base. D-backs, though, with the lead 2-1, courtesy of RBIs from a couple catchers, Blake Swihart and Carson Kelly. Swihart's playing left field, but he came into Major League Baseball as a catcher. Those guys have driven in the runs off of the Colorado starter, who tonight is Jeff Hoffman, an 8.10 ERA this season. I mean, you'd like to be able to maybe jump on him. He's only making his third start of the season.
I had never heard of him before tonight.
Yeah, Colorado, it's funny. I mean, they've never really had good pitching, ever. If you had to put together, this is not a Colorado radio station, so we don't have to do this, but if you had to put together a Colorado starting five rotation all time, I don't even know who's on it. I couldn't even name you one guy that's on it. I guess Denny Nagel was half decent a long time ago. Mike Hampton. I mean, that is a team that can always hit and can never pitch. But the D-backs got to come out of this series with something. Having lost the first two games, they can't.
I would put Ubaldo Jimenez on that list.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But I mean, still, it's not like we're talking about Sandy Koufax here.
Jorge De La Rosa.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, those guys are fine. But all time?
That's all I've got.
Yeah. I'm impressed you even came up with those two. But you can't. They still have a game against the Rockies tomorrow afternoon, but you can't come out of this series with certainly getting swept. It'd be really nice at this point to split, because if you keep losing to the Rockies, all of a sudden they are in the race again after their really slow start to the season. So this is quietly a pretty pivotal point in the season here for the D-backs. They'll get a return home after the series, but they're going to be hosting the Mets. Okay, that's winnable, although you're going to face Jacob deGrom probably on Saturday. And then a 3-game series against the Dodgers, and I have no interest in pitching to Cody Bellinger right now. Do you? I mean,
no.
Even if it's Greinke, I don't want anybody throwing to him.
I don't want to have that guy step in the dish with runners in scoring position, and I'm like, oh, gosh, I got to get this guy out. Good luck.
The worst guy to face right now.
Is he the MVP right now? He's got to be,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And Christian Yelich is having a great year, too.
He is.
But Bellinger's up. He's up around like 400 batting average. That's insane.
And also, while we're on the baseball note, how about the Minnesota Twins? They are an offensive machine. They lead Major League Baseball in literally every single offensive run-producing category you could possibly think of.
How insane is that?
I thought they would be okay. I didn't think they were going to have the best record in baseball at the end of May.
I definitely didn't. I thought they'd be okay. A buddy of mine who follows baseball really close was like, watch the Twins this year. They're going to be a good team. I did not think they were going to have the offense that they have, but they do. And they're already up 10 games in that division on Cleveland, who has no offense. Also with the D-backs, that series coming up against the Dodgers early next week, I mean, you run a little bit of a risk of being off if you're trying to project the rotation too far out. But most likely, Greinke's going to pitch on Saturday against DeGrom in that game against the Mets. So
I'm going to go to that.
That's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I just want to see the pitching matchup.
I'm going on Friday.
Is that a day game?
It's 7 o'clock.
Oh, man. I'd rather have that be a day game. I like Saturday day games.
We'll call over and see if they can make it a day
just,
game.
Just change it?
Yeah, just why not?
Yeah.
We've got some sort of... It's the flagship station. We should be able to dictate what time the games are.
Back to my... Oh, by the way, Ubaldo Jimenez was really good in Colorado. He has a wins above replacement of 19 for his career. That is insanely good for a pitcher. So he was a very good Rockies pitcher.
He was. But he trailed off real quick, too.
Yeah.
He was posting that, like, over 8 ERA a couple of times. That might have been with the Orioles. How did we get talking about Ubaldo Jimenez?
Because you asked me to name a list of, or you asked yourself or anybody to name
anybody.
Five great Rockies
and
pitchers.
And it was a struggle.
And he has franchise records in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So he had a really good career.
He was good. He had some nasty stuff, too. But that series against the Dodgers, right now, it's supposed to be Robbie Ray against Walker Buehler in game one. Taylor Clark against Hyunjin Ryu in game two. Ryu's looking like a Cy Young winner the way he's pitching. And then game three is unknown against Kenta Maeda. So that is, I mean, that's a week off. We can worry about that in a week, but that's not the ideal way to go into a series against a team that is hitting the way the Dodgers are.
It's a real bummer because Luke Weaver was really starting to learn how to be a big leaguer and get guys out and extend his outings, which, because that was his issue in St. Louis. A lot of people didn't follow him in St. Louis. I don't blame you, but he only had like 3 starts out of 25 last year that went beyond the 6th inning.
Yeah.
That's not very good.
No,
and he figured it out this year.
This year, he's a quality start machine, but now he's not pitching. Yeah, because he was supposed to pitch this Friday against Wheeler in the Mets series, and then he was supposed to pitch the following Wednesday against Maeda in the Dodgers series. Back to the Cardinals here, looking at the offense. David Johnson was asked, I think everybody just wants to make sure this is taken care of, how you're going to be used in this offense.
I think it's going to be similar to 2016. But probably more shotguns are home, which is good because I did that in college and we had a running quarterback. So I think it'll be good for me. And I think, I'll be utilized as running back and a receiver.
Now, David Johnson is the eternal optimist. I think Cardinals fans are well aware of that at this point. But he was, in line with his typical character, pretty optimistic about how the offense could look even in year one with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, meshing great. It's been going great, learning the playbook, and I think it's going to be real good offense as far as everything. And, you know, he's a lot faster and quicker than I thought he was, especially when we get on the field. So I think it's going to be a dynamic offense.
I just want them to use him better than Mike McCoy did. Really, that's all I want.
I don't know if I agree that it's going to be similar to 2016, though. This is going to look completely different than that. And that was obviously his best year.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, that's a safe answer for him to go to that. But it was also his only fully healthy year, if I'm not mistaken. So
that was his last fully healthy
year.
I
mean, yes.
I guess he was healthy last year. They just didn't use him. It was so weird.
Didn't he miss a few? I can't remember. I'm trying to forget last year.
Well, we all are. And we don't. You know what? I'm looking forward to the start of this season so we can simply never have to talk about last season again. David Johnson also was asked how often he'll be used as a wide receiver.
I don't know. We're still doing, you know, the base plays. So it'll probably come down to defense we play and stuff like that.
Now, we always talk about this because Cliff Kingsbury was asked about it a little bit later on. And he said he could tell already that David Johnson has experience as a route runner. Like, he doesn't look like a running back in that regard. But at the same time, he's big in terms of a receiver. So he's definitely a matchup nightmare for opposing linebackers, if that's who you have to put on him. You have to utilize him.
You're right. 16 games last year, by the way.
Yeah, but it just didn't feel like
it. Didn't feel like it, yeah.
Because they didn't give him the ball in the first 7 games. And then even after that, they refused to use him as a receiver. Now, David Johnson was careful to point out today that it's very early. They're just learning the basics of Cliff Kingsbury's offense. So he can't answer a question about how often he's going to be used as a receiver. But I think we can pretty safely assume Cliff Kingsbury, A, was brought in because he knows how to utilize a weapon like David Johnson, and B, I think a lot of the reason that Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell were so frustrated with Mike McCoy and Steve Wilks and everything, even before the season really got out of hand last year, was because they didn't know how to use David Johnson. So I'm pretty sure a requirement for anybody that was going to be the head coach of this team is going to be somebody that could actually use the running back at his fullest potential. So we'll see what that means. It's also important because, again, you look at the receiving corps this year, you've got Larry Fitzgerald, who made a really nice catch today. He's been doing his whole career. Christian Kirk, who's only in his second year, and then essentially a lot of rookies. Like, there may be another guy, Kevin White may step in, but he doesn't have much experience actually playing at the NFL level. Christian Kirk was asked about Andy Isabella today.
He's quiet for sure. Probably heard him say like five words since he's been here. But that's all right. I mean, that's all about, you know, being a rookie. You know, I was saying, well, I was quiet at first. And, you know, I'm sure he'll open up a little bit as we get going here. But he does work hard. You know, he takes to the coaching.
Now, one of the things that is also big now, when you have a guy like Murray that can extend plays and move around in the pocket or get outside the pocket, is it extends play, so it helps your offense, certainly, but it is different if you're a receiver, and Christian Kirk addressed that as well.
It just kind of changes your mindset of just creating separation and knowing that we have to extend plays. You know, watching guys like Aaron Rodgers and stuff and what they do over there in Green Bay, you know, a lot of their touchdowns in the red zone come from him being able to do things with his feet. So, you know, if we're able to replicate somewhat of that and, you know, be successful after, you know, after the scramble and getting open for Kyler, you know, that's going to help us out a lot.
I don't know what I expect this team to do in terms of winning, but I definitely expect them to be a lot more entertaining than they were last year. And you know, you need some wins to come along with that so that you can just continue to go forward with it. If they're entertaining, but they win two games next year, okay, well, that's a problem, certainly. You may not be seeing a lot of this. I don't think they're going to be as bad. I think if this Cardinals team is bad this season, a lot of it is because you have a new head coach and a new quarterback. Not that those guys aren't going to get better, just because it is a rookie quarterback. I think you could see them struggle, certainly. But it can't be as bad as last year, right? It can't. Even if it's five wins, but they're entertaining and you see some signs of life going forward, I think Cardinals fans would be, you're not going to be happy with five wins, but you could live with that.
I wonder what the percentage of teams that are coming off a 3-13 season didn't win or did not match their win total from the previous year. You know what I mean? That's got to be a very, very low percentage.
Like the win even below? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the Browns have probably done it 100 times, but it's got to be a very low percentage.
I don't even know how you'd find that, but you're right. If you win three games, I know it sounds cliche, and they were saying, Christian Kirk said today, there's really nowhere to go but up.
Right.
But, I mean, mathematically, he's right. There really is nowhere to go but up. All right, hour number two of the show coming up. We'll get you another update from Coors Field, and I want to go around the NBA. There's a couple stories that don't have anything necessarily to do with these playoffs, but could certainly impact next season. So we'll get into that next segment as well. It's the Rundown, Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.